Hello and welcome to the Go Perform podcast. Today I have the pleasure of having a chat with the captain of England's parachair football team, their number 8, Mr. John Boldyng. Not only is he one of the best parachair football players in the world, but he has also led England to the European title in 2019 and the World Cup runners-up last year. So welcome, John, and thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
No worries, I'm looking forward to this one. So if we start at the beginning of your story, how did you get into football? Because obviously I know you and I know you're a big football fan.
Yeah.
So where did that all come from?
So obviously I loved football growing up. I was always an Arsenal fan and played football with my friends and stuff over the park. But as I got older, obviously my disability, my mobility.
There we go.
That's the one. Got a bit worse. And so I struggled to play with my friends and stuff because it was a bit slower and I couldn't hit the ball as hard. And then I was due to have a back operation, scoliosis, so I had rods put in my back, straight in my spine. And I knew then, obviously, my mobility would be a lot even worse than what it already was. So thankfully at the time, the Middlesex FA came into my school and put a poster up about a first parachair football tournament that was going to be held in this country. And that was going to be at Stanmore Hospital, the Aspire Rehabilitation Centre. And I went to that and... loved parachair football. Like I said, it was the first time it had ever been played, so I didn't know what it was about. It was about learning the rules and the sport. And it was like massive football, and it was our old NHS chairs, and we'd cut half a car tyre and put it on the front of the wheel, foot plates, and just basically push the ball into the net. So it was not as it is now, but it was a great game back then. And then after that, about 2 weeks later, I got a phone call asking me if I wanted to go to Japan, because that's where it originated from.
Okay.
And play against a couple of their like school teams and learn a lot more about it, and kind of that's where it all kicked off for me.
Amazing. So for those who don't know about parachair football, talk to me about it, come on.
So it's four a side, mainly on a basketball size court. Obviously they can be bigger and smaller, but mainly around the same size. 20 minutes each way. You have a dedicated goalkeeper, but they can come out and go wherever they want. The main rules are there's a 2-on-1 rule where you can only have like 1-on-1 tackling. If there's another player on your team that's 3 metres of the ball, that's classed as 2-on-1, and you give a foul away. Other rules, obviously there's no offsides. You have corners, you have kick-ins, obviously instead of throw-ins. What else you got? You're only allowed 2 players from each team in the box.
Okay.
And so if obviously if there's 3 in the box, and it's a free kick on the edge of the box.
Okay.
Likewise, it's a foul. Go kick the other way.
And can anyone play parachair football?
There's classification.
Okay.
Obviously, we kind of want the sport to be able for people that are more severe than able-bodied. So if you've got upper body strength mainly, you might be classified out because you can use a manual chair and you can play other sports. It's kind of up for a little bit of debate because for me, even if you can play other sports, you might want to still only play football. So it's one of them. We have classifiers throughout the country and obviously the world that dictate who is available to play or not. There is a classification system where you've got PF1 or PF2. You've got to have a total of, or minimum of 6 PF numbers on the pitch. So normally it's 2 PF2s and 2 PF1s.
Yeah.
If you have 3 PF2s, then you can only play 3 players because... if you only have 3 players that are PF2s, that don't obviously only add up to 6.
Right, okay, fine.
So you'd only allow 3 on the pitch rather than an extra one.
Yeah, okay.
So, yeah, so you have to manage the team wisely. But yeah, that's the overall classification rule.
And what did you find differences from when you first started playing football, like you said, when you were playing mainstream, to then when you found that leaflet? How did you find that affected
you? It was like eye-opening and inspiring for me because obviously my brain could tell me what I actually wanted to do, but my legs obviously couldn't do that. But then when I got in a chair, I could tell the chair to do exactly what I wanted to, and it just gave me that new lease of life to like actually feel a part of playing football. Whereas I was just, when I was playing with my friends, it was kind of, if the ball hit me, then great, I'd made a save or I managed to hit kick it, but I couldn't run after the ball or I couldn't jump and push over the bar, etc. That's obviously what I wanted to do, but I couldn't do it. So yeah, like when I found parachair football, it allowed me to do exactly what I wanted to do and my brain was telling me to do.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And can you tell us a little bit about your condition, John? So you said about the surgery, which you had to have, but pre that.
So I've got a condition called central core myopathy, which means that my muscles, mainly my legs, don't grow at the rate of a normal person. And so growing up, I always wore calipers on my legs. Mm-hmm. At the age of two, I started wearing them. And so I would wear them every day, and they allowed me to walk. But because they would click like straight, I would walk kind of like a penguin, like kind of side to side. And that's how I always done growing up. And then, like I say, when I got to kind of secondary school, around about age 13, 14, I started to slow up a little bit. And yeah, that's when I kind of had my back operation. And found power to football, so it kind of tied into
nice. And have you found you've had to do a lot of additional training alongside sport wise just to try and maintain strength and mobility?
Yeah, because you can either just sit back and be lazy and everything kind of drains away with you, but you try and, like anybody really, you want to try and keep fit as much as you can. And power to football, as much as it isn't physically draining, it's mentally draining. And so you've got to make sure you're in the right frame of mind for that as well. And obviously it does help to be in the right condition, not overweight, and eating the right stuff, and being as best physically conditioned as can be.
And how would you say para chair football has affected your life?
Oh, it's been amazing. It's life changing. Like, there's so many people I've met, so many countries I've been to, so many like experiences I've just gained from para chair football that I would never have had if I hadn't found it, basically. Because, like I say, I would not have been able to play any kind of sport football wise without it. And just the thrill of being a part of the team, winning, losing, like I say, visiting many different countries. I've been Japan, America, Portugal, Ireland, like
all over the place.
And like, for me, like my favourite country is America and Florida, and to have a World Cup there was like the pinnacle for me of this sport. And it was just incredible. And I couldn't have wished for anything else, being a part of this sport. And obviously then to represent England as well was incredible as well.
And obviously, because I know you, John, I know a little bit about your background and I know about your family. And didn't something happen on your wedding day?
It did. So I'd always been a part of England squad, mm-hmm. but the FA only took it over in 2013.
Okay.
So we'd always be an England squad, but it was more of a Wheelchair Football Association England squad than official England squad.
Okay.
So then the FA took it over in 2013. And so we'd wear all the official gear and stuff from then on. And it so coincided that the next year, 2014, was going to be the Euros year.
Yep.
And it was in Ireland. And again, like I say, we'd first get our caps and all of this. And I'd already planned my wedding for 2014. And I planned it knowing the dates of the Euros. And the Euros were meant to be in like March time. So I booked my wedding for July. And as the year got a bit closer, notification came out that they changed the dates of the Euros.
Okay.
And the first date of the first games of our group stage was going to be on the 18th of July, which is my wedding day. And so obviously at the time I said to my wife, obviously like the wedding's more important, and I'll miss it on this occasion and then just make the next one. But obviously they still wanted me to be involved in the training leading up to the World Cup at the Euros, and knowing just to be a part of the squad and stuff. But obviously as you're getting more involved in the squad and looking at the fixtures that are going to come up, and just to hear the national anthem and wear the official England shirt for the first time, it's kind of like something I didn't really want to miss. And obviously my wife understood, and she knows how much Powerchair football means to me. So obviously I was continuing to say I won't go, and she was like, well, you can go if you want. I was like, no, it's fine, like the wedding's coming up. And then just one day I built on the courage to text her. I texted her a long little message and, saying, like, would you mind if I went? And I had to buy her a Mulberry handbag, so it kind of cost me a little bit. But my wedding day, I had to miss the first two games, which were the group stage, on my wedding day. So I had my wedding, didn't drink the whole day. And then when the wedding finished at 1 o'clock in the morning, I drove to Stansted Airport and then flew over to Ireland. Luckily, it was kind of close anyway.
Yeah.
Flew to Stansted, played Saturday, Sunday, and then we lost in the final, unfortunately. Flew back Sunday night and then went on my honeymoon on Monday.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah. So nice, supported family then, and your wife obviously letting you go to the tournament, which is good.
Yeah, I can. She doesn't let me forget it, though.
Oh, good. And how did it feel? Because were you still captain at that time? How did it feel being the captain as an official England squad? How does that feel?
It was huge. And, like I say, for me, I love being part of a team, and especially wearing the England kit and all of that stuff. It was kind of like everything I'd done previously for an unofficial England team all came to like fruition, and like it was what I'd always dreamed of. And as even though it was England before, it wasn't official, and so it was just like just special.
Yeah.
And yeah, just to get that first England cap as well was something like a treasure.
Nice. Yeah. And you've obviously been, like you said, to a lot of tournaments, a lot of countries with the squad. What would you say your proudest moments are being with the team?
It's got to be obviously lifting the European title. We've been a part of the sport for many years and we've got so close. I think we've been to two finals, one semi-final, and to finally win it is something that I've dreamed of doing. Obviously I've achieved much for my club team, and so England was kind of the things that I needed to tick off. And it was a tough tournament. We'd lost to France in the group stages of the tournament, and so when we were going into the final, we knew that it was going to be tough. Mm-hmm. But one thing that we're good as a team, we look over video footage so much, and so we knew that the group stages allowed us to play our way, and then counteract whatever they've done to score against us to then move it on in the final and stuff. And that's what we've done, and thankfully it worked. We went 2-0 down in the final, but then we came back to 2-2 and then won on penalties. So it was an amazing feeling that final penalty went in. I just like couldn't believe it, and I just imagine and remember my dad running on the pitch and coming over, because it was like, it's not just us, it's our families as well that have been there with us through the down times of losing in finals, losing in semi-finals, to then like see the joys on their faces as well when we win a final and a trophy, especially for England. It's very special.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah. And what do you think the difference was with that tournament of, you'd had failings before when you'd lost in the finals? What do you think made it your time, your time to win and hold that trophy?
A lot of hard work, like I say, a lot of stuff behind the scenes with not just the video stuff. Like we had Sykes then who give us a little different way of thinking things and the way we respond to referees, and just little minor tweaks that we had that other countries don't necessarily have. Mm-hmm. Like I say, we're fully backed by the FA and not a lot of power tier countries are. And so we have physios, we have Sykes, we have obviously all of the backing staff to give us the best possible need that we need. And I think we just tapped into everything and used it properly. And obviously we put a lot of hard work in on the pitch. And so it kind of just all came together at one time, and it was lovely to be a part of.
Yeah, nice. And what does training look like for you? Because obviously as an England squad, I know you can only meet once every month.
Yeah, once a month, 2 months maybe. Yeah.
And then you have your club football as well.
Yeah.
So how does that look? Like, what does your training consist of?
So for my club, we train every Sunday for 3 hours. Mm-hmm. Sunday morning, 12 till 3. And like I say, that's every week. And then we've got England training, like I say, I think it's like once every 2 months maybe, which consists of a Friday and Saturday. Mm-hmm. And then, we meet up as a squad of 8 and put on a session, what they do in England. And then we've got nationals for our club, which is 5 weekends a year.
Okay.
And so we've got one coming up this weekend, actually. And England-wise, we kind of have a friendly tournament maybe once a year, which involves normally a 4 Nations, which is England, Scotland, Northern Ireland and Ireland, which we've got one coming up at the end of May in Largs in Scotland. Looking forward to that. But along with my club, we've got regional league as well, which is a little bit lower level than national league. So we use that as a kind of, our team use it as kind of a training exercise. And so we play against teams that are not in the national league. Yeah. So.
And does all your training focus around, is it all football focused? Or like I say, do you do anything else from a cardio point of view or from a strength? Or do you look into nutrition? You touch psychology.
Yeah, at England level we do. Mm-hmm. Not at my club. We don't have the funds to begin with all the staffing of that. It's all volunteer work at my club. So mainly it's more football based training. While I try and encourage the lads and the ladies to look at the way they look after themselves, it's quite hard because obviously everyone's got different stages of their life. They do mm-hmm. different things. Some work, some don't. It's kind of, I don't focus too much as I'm the manager of my club as well. I don't really focus too much on the food side of things and just hope that they look after themselves.
Yeah, okay. And are there a lot of clubs locally, or do you have to travel quite far to get to the clubs?
They're kind of all spread over. Reading did have one at one point, but I don't think it's going anymore, unfortunately. The problem is, obviously, we have got a lot of clubs. I think we've got over like 60 clubs throughout England. It's very expensive to do it. Our chairs that we play in are £10,000 each, roughly. That's just for a standard chair. As you can imagine, disabled players have different kind of chairs and needs, and so back supports and stuff like that, it becomes a bit more expensive. And for a team to start, ideally you need at least four chairs, which is £40,000.
Okay.
That's before you've even bought goalposts, bought balls, kit, hired out a hall. It's not like you can go down your local park and just put up a goal and play. Mm-hmm. So we've got a national development officer. His name's Adam McAvoy. His job is to go around and set up more teams and help teams out if they need help.
Okay.
Because obviously our aim is to become a Paralympic sport. And to do that, you obviously got to hit certain criteria of players playing the sport and teams that are in the league. And so that's his job. And we are every year getting bigger. Just hoping one day we get that break and get in the Paralympics.
Nice. And hopefully you'll still be playing to make it.
If not, I'll come out of retirement just to play.
I don't know if the other teammates would be very happy with that. So along your journey, obviously, not everything can be plain sailing. And like you said, you've had a lot of championships when you've not quite won, there I mentioned last year, Worlds. Yeah. So how have you faced these challenges or any setbacks? And can you talk about any of them?
I've had on the pitch a few setbacks, obviously losing finals and losing games that we should have won. Off the pitch, I've had quite a few physically. Obviously with my condition as well, it's hard enough. But then throughout the years, I've fallen over and broke my hip and pelvis. And as you know, you helped me through the recovery of that. And it's just, you can't obviously plan for stuff like that. And there are times where, when I've done my hip and pelvis, it was in Barcelona. It was like the first day that I was there. It's kind of like you don't know whether you're going to come back from it, because it was a massive thing for me, not being able to walk for a start, and then have this operation to put all my hip and pelvis back together again, and then have the recovery time of like 6 months. Obviously you're away from the sport for that period of time as well, so mentally it's quite challenging. But I did have great family and friends around me, and work as well. I work for Fujitsu IT company. They were great. Come around every couple of weeks to check on me and make sure I'm all right, and probably just to making sure that they're still paying me for being off and not going out and doing other stuff. But that's what is really important. People don't always see the background stuff that goes on just to get me on the pitch. It's a big support network that we've got. Like I said, my family's great, and they've always been a part of my sport. Obviously, mainly my dad, but since my dad's gone, my brother-in-law's taken over, and he's a major part of what I do. And so, it's just a big operation to just get on the pitch. A lot of people have helped me along the way. I'm forever grateful for that.
No, which is great. And obviously, I have worked in some of the parachair football, and it does seem like a real big family, like you say. And when you're injured or when you're not able to be participating in the sport, having that big support network and them checking in on you, or did you still do your team managing role then? Were you still feeling that you were involved in the sport in some way?
Obviously the lads and ladies still trained, so I was still a part of that, sent through obviously training schedules and stuff like that, and it is it's huge that a lot of the team go through their weeks just looking forward to playing football the weekend. Lucky for me, obviously I've got a job, and so that kind of takes my focus away from football some of the time, but a few of the team that people that I've got in my team don't work, and so football is their life, and so they do look forward to it every Sunday, and if it's not on, then it's like a major thing for them. So we've got to make sure that we keep their brain ticking over with football, and I give them like things to do during the week if they are bored, to look over footage and see where they can improve as a player and as a team, whether we need to go over and think. So it's the football is people's lives, really.
Yeah, nice. And you said about the hip injury, and obviously you came here for that.
I did.
How was your training? Was it hard? Was it?
It was needed.
Okay.
Obviously, my hip went through my pelvis, so I had a hip replacement. And from then, it was getting back on my feet. which you're amazing at helping me get back to that level. Obviously with my walker and stuff, it was allowing me to walk again, and just the recovery of what to do and not what to do with my hip, and mm-hmm. making sure it doesn't pop out again. And it was a great time I was here with you, and we achieved quite a lot.
We did, and I hope you're still doing some of those exercises at home.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, you're just saying that for me.
No.
Good. So what would you say, when you're playing in the team, what would you say your biggest strengths are in the team?
Communication and leadership, I'd say. Mm-hmm. I'd say I'm manager of my team, captain of my team, captain of England. So that's kind of my role anyway. But I just feel it just comes naturally. Like I kind of orchestrate what happens on the pitch, and that's just me naturally. It's not forced or anything. And so I feel that's my biggest strength, and I feel everyone around me knows that if they're uneven on something, they can come to me and I can help them out. And it's been quite successful over the past few years. So.
Nice. And in your team, you're probably the longest standing player?
And oldest, yeah.
Oldest. I wasn't going down older, sorry.
Yeah, I've been playing since 2002, so 22 years now I've been playing.
Yeah.
Quite a lot of them. I've got a 14-year-old in my team now, and he's like, it's mad.
You could be his dad.
Yeah, I could be. It's mad, like, the ages of people now. And so it's lovely for me, because when I was 14, it wasn't around.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just to see how much the sport has progressed over the years. It's just incredible that players are of that age. And he played in the World Cup last year. And that's a proud moment for me, because he's part of my team. And to see him go from my team into the England team at such a young age is a great feeling for me. And obviously he's a tremendous player, so he deserved to be there anyway. But
amazing. Yeah. And what do you think is bringing on these younger players now for the Parachair football? Do you just think it is more known, or there's more availability?
Yeah, both of that. The awareness of the sport is getting out there. Like, say, every cup final now every year is on BT Sport or TNT Sport now. So that's showing it to a wider audience that don't know about it. And the availability, like say, of the teams that are around the country now, that there are teams within an hour drive or an hour and a half drive. And it's dedication. Like for me, I've got two players in my team that travel 2.5 hours every training session. And there are closer teams, but because we are a successful team, they want to be part of us. And that's, again, a massive thing for me as a manager, that sees players do want to come and play for us, and know that I can progress them as players to become better players, and hopefully in the England team one day.
Nice. And do you think the game's developed, like progressed over the years which you've been playing? Have you noticed a difference in the game?
Oh, a difference in the game, difference in the quality of players. The chairs, obviously, like I said, when I first played, they were NHS chairs, and so slow and stuff. But now we've got specific built chairs that come over from America that are built for the sport. So they've got fans, they've got the right spec of equipment to make it last the whole 40 minutes of a match. And the ball's smaller than it was when we first started. Mm-hmm. The rules always get upgraded to make the game more thrilling. And so it's definitely progressing. Like in the running game, you always get better. Well, VAR is not a good thing, but some of the rules are better for the purpose of the game. And that's where we're at now with Parachair Football. Every year we get a review of the rules, and people can give their opinions of what should be done to improve it. And we've just had one over the last couple of weeks. So I'm hoping some of the suggestions I've put in do get considered. Because one of the downsides is the people that make the decisions in our sport don't play it.
Okay.
And they're on a higher committee that no one's played the sport. And I think out of that committee, there's only one person in a wheelchair, and she doesn't play anymore. So it's like kind of one of them where sometimes the rules are good for the sport, and sometimes people that make them don't really necessarily understand what impact they're going to have on the sport. So it's just one of them. Sometimes they're good, sometimes they're not. But
yeah,
hopefully in the future, more good ones will be better than worse.
Nice. And if there's any youngsters out there, or even don't have to be young, as you've said, because of how old you're still playing, what advice would you give to somebody who might be wanting to start out in the sport?
I'd ask them to go to the Wheelchair Football Association website. Mm-hmm. On there will be a list of all of the teams available in this country, and then just reach out. Even if you're not personally interested in football, but you know someone that does, I would love them to be involved and just come down and give it a go. Because even or go on YouTube, put into Parachair Football on YouTube, have a look, see what it's about, and then if it grabs their taste, then come down to the local team and give it a go. Because as much as it looks great on the telly, on YouTube as well, it's a different feeling when actually being involved in it and mm-hmm. having to spin it and seeing it go in the back of the net. It's a great experience, and I'd love people that are not involved at the moment to be involved and yeah. feel what I feel.
And why would you recommend it then? What do you come on, tell me, what do you feel? Why do you love it so much?
Oh, it's just amazing. Like, just the feel of winning a game, feel of being part of a team, just that community spirit that I spoke about earlier. It's a feeling it's hard to explain. Like, the euphoria? Yeah. Of being a part of a winning team and just being, meeting up every week and just talking about your week and being on the training pitch and working hard and seeing that skills and the stuff that you've been working on in training, when you then go and play in a match and see it work there, you know all them hours that you've spent training has been worth it. And it's just people that have not been part of a sport in general, it just gives you a different look on life, and I encourage anyone to be involved that isn't already.
Nice. And have you got any games coming up which might be on TV or might be somewhere which people can look out for?
Yeah, so this weekend we've got in Nottingham. So if you have a look at Powerchair Football YouTube channel, all of our games, all the games are streamed. So you can have a look on there. Our big one for us is in June. We've got the WFA Cup final, mm-hmm. which has been held at St George's Park, and it will be on TNT Sport. So have a look at that. Keep your eye out for the advertising that will go out for that. And yeah, it's a massive event for us. That's like the pinnacle of our year, being on the telly and showcasing what we can do to the wider public, and hopefully we come away victorious.
Nice. Well, good luck with that one.
Thank you.
And is there anything else you want to add before we finish?
No, just I encourage anyone, like even not Powerchair players, just not disabled players, just people in general, that if you are like not part of a sport or just sitting at home not doing very much, I would encourage just to get out there and get involved in any kind of sport, just to give your mental health good going over and give a release of energy that maybe is all built up for unexpected reasons. And it's like I say, it's changed my life, and hopefully it will change someone else's being involved in any kind of sport.
Amazing. I love that. Yeah. So thank you very much for coming in today and having a chat. It's been awesome. I've loved it.
So have I.
And for everyone else, I'll put in a couple of links. So I'll get John to give me the details of the associations and where you can look. And I'll put some links on so people can check them out if they want to.
Yeah.
Perfect. Well, thanks very much.
Thank you.